Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Big News Wednesday here at the Damage Report. You know, it's such a big thing, this tradition of Big News Wednesday, that we should really have an intro to it at some point. We should talk about that, team. Anyway, you know what comes on Big News Wednesdays? That's right, big news. Also, J.R. Jackson. J.R., how's it going?
Hey, what's going on? Usually I have something ridiculous to say to you or bring up when I come in, right? And it's usually pretty annoying and I like it that way.
You got
I'm super tired today. I've got nothing.
It's big 4 hours of sleep Wednesday.
Yeah, it's big 4 hours of, I don't know. I might say a couple words that don't make any sense, you know, something like that. But we're here. I got my two strong. This is gonna wake me up. I got the morning blend. Don't mess with me. Listen, I'm already back. Well. Look at that. I like that mug. Your mug is so much cooler than mine, though.
This is a pretty cool mug. I think a viewer actually sent these in for Cenk, but probably had no interest in me drinking from it. But now it's happening. It's here, and Cenk's not because it is August. It's August? Yes, it's August. Yes. And still, it is as empty in the studio as it was last August when I was here. There's still nobody here.
It's depressing.
I'm beginning to think it's not going to get better. But anyway, to that end, we will be talking about COVID in a little bit.
I want to have one small reminder of my prediction from the beginning of COVID. And someone said, how long do you think this is going to go? And I said, well, after the vaccine happens, I'd say 5 years, because there's going to be enough idiots that aren't going to take it. I remember saying that in the middle. It was probably last spring, summer. I was like, 5 years, 5 years.
No, I really did think we'd be out for 2 weeks.
Now, I thought I was, once the vaccine came in, I was like, cool, let's make it happen. I thought I was gonna be wrong on the 5 year, but now we're starting to see that potential. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, surely next August will be great. It has to be, right? I mean, think about all of the ways we would have to fail as a society, as a government, as individuals to have another year of chaos. Surely that couldn't happen. But anyway, we're going to be talking about some of those failures in just a little bit. Then other sorts of failures, like in safeguarding democracy. Also, what's going on in Afghanistan? So that's all going to be fun. Who do people blame for what's actually happening there? I asked that on the show earlier this week. We now have a poll to that effect. And you know what? While we're speaking about polls, why don't we remind people that right now at tyt.com/polls, we put up a poll yesterday about Chris Cuomo addressing the issue with Governor Andrew Cuomo, asking you, do you think that he will step down from his hosting role at CNN? And we will be giving you the results a little bit later on in the show, but there's still a bit of time if you want to go to tyt.com/polls and fill that out. Beyond that, Sean Hannity, I don't know what's going up with him, going on with him recently, because we're gonna play some videos from a show. I think he's just done with everything. I think he cares as little as I do these days, except it's going in a slightly darker direction. And then we got a bunch of other stuff besides. There's a lot going on. It is, after all, a Big News Wednesday. So buckle up, hold on to your butts, hit the like button, do those three things. You might want to hit the like button before holding on to your butts. It'll be a little bit easier to manipulate the mouse.
Yeah, and also your mouse won't smell like your butt afterwards.
It's just a brief hold. It shouldn't be that tainting your hand. But anyway, I'm just speaking about me personally. That's true. It is dangerous. You roll the dice when you hold onto your butts with TDR. Anyway, and you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, and we'll respond as we go. With all of that said, probably too much said, JR, are you ready to talk about the news?
I'm done.
Okay, in that case, let's jump right into it. So I don't know if you were able to catch it in that video, completely unmasked fundraiser little meeting thing, was Governor Greg Abbott, who I'm sure by now you know has tested positive for COVID. Yesterday, his office put out a tweet saying that the governor would place himself in isolation while recovering from the virus, saying, quote, the governor has been testing daily and today was the first positive test result. Governor Abbott is in constant communication with his staff, agency heads, and government officials to ensure that state government continues to operate smoothly and efficiently. So if you are worried about the Texas state government's ability to not do anything about the pandemic, don't worry, they will be just as incapable as they were before he got sick. Now, what you need to know about Governor Abbott specifically is that he is positive for COVID. He's fully vaccinated against COVID-19, in good health, and currently experiencing no symptoms. But despite that, despite no symptoms whatsoever, he has already begun receiving Regeneron's monoclonal antibody treatment, the same therapy used by President Donald Trump when he was shaky health-wise when he started taking that. If you recall his display at breathing that he did. But anyway, so JR, he's got COVID, no symptoms. His wife is tested negative, so she apparently avoided it. But he is already taking this Regeneron treatment. Is that like just an abundance of caution? Does that indicate a level of fear and anxiety that seems surprising from someone who's been so casual about the whole thing? What do you think? Yeah,
the rich and powerful, I think, in this case, it's like better be safe than sorry. Like, you know, let's go through all the processes. You know, no symptoms, I think, is what was reported for Abbott. No symptoms. He probably wouldn't even really know he had it if he wasn't tested daily. All these things have been happening with him. And so the Regeneron treatment is probably just to make sure, because we got to make sure the folks that don't care about anyone else's lives, that their lives are 100 and 200% protected from the thing that they don't care about anyone else catching. So it's just, it's the big thing about this, it's the illustration of care and concern and planning that goes for this guy. But the lack of care, concern, and plan is supposed to go for everyone else. Yeah, sure, he'll tell everyone, yeah, you should get vaccinated, and moves on and says, by the way, if you're not gonna get vaccinated, just go ahead and spread it. Oh, and if there's anyone who wants to have any kind of mandates to help protect folks that can't get vaccinated or that have that are more, their immune systems are a little, have more issues, who cares? Who cares? Like, what about your freedoms? So it really does show, and we've seen these comparisons all the time, but it gets more and more stark as this spreads more and more. I'm protected, but F you don't have to be protected. And also the people around you that would have issues to protect themselves, who cares about them too? It's just we're seeing the levels of care that come for one group of people, one class of people in our country versus another.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And look, I know people in the chat right now are speculating that maybe he's much sicker than they're saying, which, look, that's possible, but he is fully vaccinated. And as we continually say, that does mean that you generally are gonna have a much milder case. So until we see evidence of it, or if he literally doesn't appear in public for the next 3 weeks, really suspiciously, right, I'm gonna assume that he's doing pretty well. Which honestly makes the fact that he's able to, you know, very easily quarantine, still be able to do his job, he's being given all this experimental Elysium medicine. It makes it even worse, because what we now have basically is a return to, I don't know if you remember one of the characters from the earlier part of the first season of The Damage Report was Dr. Johnny Bananas. And Dr. Johnny Bananas was a monkey doctor that made house calls, had the most advanced technology in medicine, but not for you peasants, he's there for the wealthy. You get sick and die, they get Dr. Johnny Bananas. And Dr. Johnny Bananas is making house calls in Texas right now. They are pumping him full of experimental monkey meds when he doesn't even have any symptoms right now. And this, by the way, let's put it in context. Right now, there are 115,000 patients hospitalized in just Texas as of Monday. I'm gonna go on a limb and guess that Tuesday wasn't much better. So probably higher than that. Are all of them getting Regeneron? I honestly don't know. I really have no idea. If you work in a hospital in Texas and you can attest to whether they have access to this too, I would honestly love to know. I hope that they are. But I know that they're more than 90% ICU capacities full. So people with COVID, people without COVID, having a difficult time even getting access to care. And this is while the guy who himself banned mask and vaccine mandates is getting the experimental monkey meds. And so this is the way it works in America. You can not only like do the wrong thing, but mandate danger for other people. And if you get sick, or even if you're only like technically sick, you'll get the most complex, expensive medicine imaginable.
That's what I was just gonna say.
Are at risk.
That's what I was just gonna say, because you said I would like to see if maybe some healthcare professionals in the state of Texas could talk about the numbers and the things that are happening and who, if they're getting Regeneron. How much does Regeneron cost for the normal person? How much does a hospital stay cost for someone who goes in there with COVID and needs other kinds of treatments, potentially going on ventilators and all that stuff? What goes in, what hospital costs do you leave with? Is this all free? Is this all covered under some kind of healthcare system, this COVID healthcare system that's been put in place, an intricate system, so that we can make sure everyone that goes in there and receives all this experimental treatment, or even to a nurse or a certain degree proven treatment, if all that goes in and happens, is it free? Do you walk in and sign off a paper and the hospital goes, yeah, we've got loads of this stuff. Anybody come in and get some? Because that's how hospitals and medical professionals work in this country, right? Anytime you receive something, you get it for free, right? You can walk in and you go, here, you guys gotta treat me, I'm gonna die. And they go, yeah, sure. don't worry about the cost. Just, hey, we have a bed for you right here. Which television program would you like to watch? Oh, Regeneron, sure, have a cold glass full. It's free. No, that's not how this works.
Well, I definitely don't think the glass full is how it works. That's true. Look, I'm trying to find out. It's saying, you know, there was a report in Forbes late last year saying $1,500 to $6,500 per treatment, but God only knows if they've been, first of all, that's a massive range, but have they been able to get the price down? How many treatments does one person have to go through? Is he individually paying for this through an abundance of caution, or is the state paying for a guy to get medicine that supposedly he doesn't require? Anyway, it's just, all I know is that we are not the only people that is pointing this out. I want to give credit to Jessica Cisneros, once again running for Congress down in the Rio Grande Valley, saying all Texans deserve the healthcare Governor Abbott is receiving. And that is 100% true. Again, I cannot say in Texas or in other states how easy, how affordable access to something like Regeneron is, but I am not shocked that he gets access to it without seeming to need it at all.
Absolutely. And by the way, the whole line, this is why we know that there's no cost out of pocket for him. That last line, Governor Abbott is in constant communication with staff, agency heads, government officials to ensure that state government continues to operate smoothly and efficiently. So for the purpose of making sure that the head of the state is still in place and not getting sick or sicker or whatever the status is, he's gonna receive this for the sake of the state running smoothly. So why would we charge him for the sake of the state? We need him. So no, hell no, he's not coming out of pocket.
You know what would help the state run smoothly? People being vaccinated, people wearing masks. Do we want our schools to run smoothly? Do we want our police officers and our prison guards to run smoothly? I don't know why. I don't know how much the Regeneron is, if it's 1500 or 6,000, but I know that masks are cheaper. I know that vaccines are cheaper. Just doesn't prioritize those to the same extent. Now that said, there are some other thoughts that we want to get to on Regeneron and what's going on with Abbott. So let's launch directly into this video.
Greg Abbott, he's in our prayers this morning because he announced that he tested positive for COVID yesterday. He has been vaccinated and still got COVID, but I think he's doing okay. He's planning on getting the Regeneron.
No symptoms, he said.
What's interesting though is if you don't get vaccinated and you go to the hospital, most of the time you're going to get Regeneron, but Regeneron are the antibodies. So you're basically still getting vaccinated because they're sticking you with an antibody.
Antibodies, and what if you can't get the vaccination? You have to shelter in place now, like an American in Afghanistan. And if you don't, these people are the worst, these inspectors. They're gonna come blitzing in there, these health inspectors. They're gonna fine you $1,000 for your first offense. Think about what everybody's been forced to do in the hospitality industry. $1,000 for your first offense, and it's gonna go up to $2,500 after that.
Well, he could be right. It could actually force people or convince people to go ahead and get the vaccine so that they can go into these places.
People making their own decisions. You shouldn't get the mayor making your medical decisions.
Well, you know, if you had talked to him, he would say it's a public health crisis.
Who wants to talk to him?
Well, he's the mayor, you said.
Okay, so I'm just gonna point out, that's about as tense as Fox and Friends ever gets between Kilmeade and Ducey there. But there, Kilmeade was responding to the fact that the vaccine mandates for certain types of establishments in New York City have now gone into effect. So if you wanna go to a theater, restaurant, gyms, things like that, you do have to be vaccinated. And obviously he's not a fan of that. But there were a couple points there, JR, that I think we have to get into. So first of all, they're not doctors, they're not experts. They would never give you medical advice. That is the cop out that a lot of people on Fox use. Although I noticed that Ainsley Earhart just said, well, you know, if you get sick and you get Regeneron, that's vaccination. No, that's not. That's not that at all. What are you talking about, that's vaccination? I thought you weren't an expert. You're not gonna speak definitively about medical stuff. That is massive misinformation right there.
Even their favorite president talked about all these different, these treatments that you gotta have, this treatment. So that it can't be the same thing. Even if you have this glib view of what vaccines are and versus what treatment is after you get the virus. I don't know how she misses that, or maybe she doesn't miss it. I don't know, because the whole point she was trying to make there was, so you still might be getting vaccinated when you go into the hospital, when you get this Regeneron. So she's kind of poo-pooing on Regeneron, not realizing it, because she needs something to say that's anti what's happening here. And to downplay the severity of the things that are happening because there's so many irresponsible folks. And kill me, Zaz. Oh God, I'm so tired. There's this anger for someone who wants to do something different to change things for the general public and the spread of this virus. You see it happening, but yeah, sure, just let it go around. And now these restaurants, these poor restaurants, they could be charged because they're not doing things for the public health. Can you believe it? We've never seen anything like this in the country before. That restaurants get monitored by the government to make sure that they're not having any health issues, and there's no nasty rats running through the kitchen, and there's not rat poop everywhere, and there's not roaches under the table. Oh my God, what next? They're gonna have some kind of grading system done by the local government to show if the restaurant is disgusting or not, and whether or not it's spreading disease. We've never seen anything like this in the country before.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. The freedom thing. This is a political movement that wants to fine you if your pants sag. You think they care about your freedom to make your own decisions? That's not what they're mostly worried about there. But you know, continued credit, our man, Steve Ducey, who is actually not just implying again, hey, maybe you should get vaccinated, that would be a good thing, but defending a Democratic mayor for doing a vaccine mandate. Like, I'm mostly joking and certainly I'm exaggerating, but he is going to get hate for that. Like, not just saying that you're vaccinated, which most of them are scared to even do, let alone encouraging someone to get vaccinated when supposedly you're not supposed to do that. But vaccine mandates are like the most controversial thing. And we were talking about this during our production call earlier. Like, why is it that Regeneron is the thing that they all focus on? Like, Ainsley's all excited about Regeneron. Why get vaccinated? You can get Regeneron. Texas is talking it up. DeSantis, you know, last week, I think it was doing this whole tour about how great Regeneron is and everything. And I think it's just, they know that they need to act like they care or that they're doing something, but there are certain like pathways that they can't go down. They can't encourage masking or social distancing because their base will hate them. They certainly can't tell you the most effective thing that you should do, which is getting vaccinated, because their base will hate them. They haven't yet been encouraged to hate Regeneron. And I don't know that they will, because Trump took that very publicly. And so that has sort of been walled off as a thing that is safe to talk about. You can acknowledge that the disease is bad and cures are needed, as long as you constrain your commentary to Regeneron. We'll allow that for now. We'll see. The right wing grift is always expanding, always looking to purify itself. Maybe Regeneron will be encapsulated under that at some point, but right now that's like the one thing that they can agree on. Well, you should definitely get Regeneron.
Well, like, I guarantee you, follow the money. You might find that Regeneron is connected to a lot of these folks' bank accounts.
Yeah,
that's just speculation.
Well, that came up in our production meeting as well. I forget exactly who it was. It was some big donor, I think, to DeSantis. But anyway, is one of the principal donors for that. Anyway, check that. I don't remember specifically, but certainly. Yeah, and it's interesting that questions about who's going to make big money off of so many people needlessly needing Regeneron when they could have avoided the whole thing by being vaccinated, they're not going to talk about that. But there's like a full court press now against the booster shots, which have been announced, with Donald Trump, hosts on Fox, and others saying this is all a massive big pharma scam to make more money, which, I mean, I don't put anything past big pharma. But this seems like a convenient way for them to attack vaccinations by pretending to attack big pharma. Do they want insulin prices regulated if you're worried about profiteering? No, you don't. It's just this one time. So yeah. Fake.
Isn't it weird how conservatives always like to talk about how everyone's trying to make money off of these things, but they're the only ones who aren't? Somehow everyone else is trying to make money off of trying to help people, but they're not trying to make money off of not helping people by giving people a middle finger and saying, get out of here. And then pushing in new different things and options that don't make a lot of sense, because that's not a way of making money. It's in broad daylight, but they'll just say the opposite thing and everyone is supposed to look that way and go, oh, it must be them over there, not the people right in front of me.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're gonna see what happens with Governor Abbott. I'm assuming thanks to a combination of vaccination, which is your best bet to stay safe, as well as the Dr. Johnny Bananas monkey meds. I think he's gonna be just fine, but we'll be tracking it day by day and we will see. We'll also see if it leads to him changing his tune a little bit about COVID in Texas. I remember what happened with Trump, so I'm not holding my breath on that. But anyway, we are going to take our first break. We come back, we're going to be getting into the John Lewis Act, what's going on in state level elections boards and more after this. Okay, with that, let's jump back into some other news. With the Democrats making no progress on the For the People Act, at least for now, they've decided to take a different tack. And the Democrats in the House have now introduced legislation aimed at restoring the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which was gutted by a 2013 Supreme Court ruling. This, of course, is the John Lewis Voting Act, which you probably heard a lot about. It is not new, it's been around for a bit, it's being reintroduced. And this, by the way, is the voting rights legislation that people like Joe Manchin say that they support. The For the People Act goes too far. He generally says very vaguely, probably has an issue with the corruption, anti-corruption measures and stuff like that. But anyway, let's talk about the path for this and how likely it is to actually be passed. House leaders expect to pass the bill named the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act after the late civil rights icon during a rare August session next week. They say it would restore the full force of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 after a pair of adverse Supreme Court rulings, and that it would help combat a wave of restrictive new election laws in Republican-led states. Only one Republican, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, is likely to support the legislation, leaving Democrats far short of the 60 votes they would need to break a Republican filibuster and send the bill to President Biden's desk. So what would it actually do? Well, again, it would take back what the Supreme Court took away. The most consequential ruling of that, and it's not the only part, but it is part of it, back in 2013, justices effectively invalidated a section of the law that required states and localities with a history of discriminatory voting rules to clear any changes to their elections policies with the federal government. At the time, the justices said that the formula used to determine which states were subject to clearance was out of date and invited Congress to update it. So there was a long documented record of these states providing racially discriminatory voting maps in a variety of different forms. Prior to 2013, they had to have them pre-cleared by the DOJ. So they couldn't simply implement them and then see if there was a challenge. They had to preemptively get them to be cleared. That was taken away. And what do you know, there's been a ton of racially discriminatory systemic voter disenfranchisement since then. So that said, JR, what are your hopes? What do you think?
Well, we like to talk about how we don't want to have these overreaching things that don't include bipartisanship with our legislation. So I'm sure you're going to get to this part about this, but the way that these states are reacting has nothing to do with bipartisanship, has nothing to do with fair voting, has nothing to do with allowing folks to vote freely in their state. And in fact, it targets specific people based off racial and partisan lines. So I wonder what this whole thing about the bipartisanship that they talk about and the fairness in our elections they like to talk about, as they blatantly do the exact opposite. So I guess nationwide, we're supposed to have these fairness laws and these split down the middle voting laws, but in each state, it just doesn't matter. In fact, it has to be worse in certain states to push these things. And if we're worried about the Supreme Court in 2013 ruled that these things are out of date for the states that they're determining have this history of racial issues with their voting, they're proving who has the issues with racial voting right now. So if you need some proof, they're providing it to you right now. So can we re-implement those things? Because the proof is right here in front of us.
Well, and isn't it amazing that, like to continue on their thing of the proof, the Supreme Court's like, you know, it's not that you don't need something like this. I just think that the list of states is wrong. So you can just come up with a new list of states and then pass that, when we know the Republicans are going to filibuster it. Why? Because the national level Republicans are no better or less opposed to democratic rights and more fundamentally racist than those working at the state level producing the maps there. So before, you had a hemming in of the state level Republicans, and now there's this pretend that we're supposed to just play that the senators are any better, but they're not. You cannot pass a new set of listing of states or whatever, or new standards for producing it. For the same reason, by the way, and let's get to this now, that you can't pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. You can't pass it, okay? The people like Joe Manchin, others were like, well, for the People Act, it goes too far. Let's just do this. And he had questions at the time, which is, well, but you're not gonna have any Republicans. And he said the stupid thing that he always says, which is, no, there are reasonable Republicans, we can get them. They've got one. And we're sort of just assuming that Lisa Murkowski would actually vote for it. I have no idea. But one might as well be none. 51 might as well be zero, because you can't pass any legislation. And so as it stands right now, there's not gonna be a For the People Act. There's not gonna be a John Lewis Voting Rights Act. There's not gonna be any re-implementation of the Voting Rights Act, which was destroyed. There's going to be nothing. And we could easily fix this by getting rid of the filibuster, or even carving out an exception for voting rights legislation. I think that that's stupid, unnecessary, but you could do it. But they're not gonna do that, JR. Yeah. So we get to talk about how necessary this is, and the next part of this block is gonna be that, but they're not gonna do it.
They're not gonna do it. And also, you brought up Joe Manchin. He knows that. He knows what math is, you know, from 50 to 60, he knows that. But the thing is, he's betting on himself. Again, if you sit and actually listen to every time Joe Manchin speaks and talks about this bipartisanship, he comes back to himself. He brings up West Virginia, or he brings up himself. This is all he cares about. So it's okay if we don't get the Voting Rights Act. It's okay if Democratic voters get disenfranchised at a high level. It doesn't matter that minorities continue to get disenfranchised as well at the state level. It doesn't matter, because all he cares about is whether or not enough Republicans in West Virginia will vote for him, because he's fooled them into believing that he's a Republican as well. And also trying to fool Democrats and believe that he's a Democrat as well. In reality, he is a Joe Manchin. He's concerned about himself. So if everyone else loses their rights and we get another Republican president put in place, and we get the control of the House and Senate by Republicans, if Joe Manchin still has his seat, he's like, mission accomplished. I don't care about anything else. I'm still here. And that's the card that he's playing.
Even if by design, with the process you just laid out, the seat is effectively meaningless when it comes to the actual exercise of power. It's not 100% meaningless. He likes it. There's a prestige to it. He gets thrown money. He'll eventually have a lobbying job. But insofar as it actually affects his constituents in a positive way, he is guaranteeing that he'll be there and that it'll be pointless. It's similar in some ways to the cases where there's gerrymandering maps that are produced that protect a couple of incumbents with effectively districts they can never lose in, even though overall the result is that their own party gets underrepresented in the legislature. But for them, you know, it works out pretty well. Anyway, I alluded to the fact that this is obviously consequential, so let's turn to that now. I actually don't know. Are we doing a sidebar type thing for this? No, I can just launch into it. That's cool. The Georgia State Board of Elections just earlier today took another step towards allowing Republicans to dominate the process, get rid of people who stand in the way of challenging the results, basically making it so that elections in Georgia are what they want to be. But let's give you the details. We've been expecting this. The board voted unanimously on Wednesday to approve a bipartisan 3-person review panel to investigate Fulton County, a Democratic bastion that includes most of the city of Atlanta. GOP lawmakers last month asked the state board to appoint the performance review panel to investigate Fulton's handling of elections, initiating the process that could allow the Republican-controlled state board to replace the county's board of registration and elections with an administrator it chooses. So they're now one step closer to that process. And let's just point out, there's a lot of ways where invocations of the concept of bipartisanship don't really mean anything. A bipartisan three-person panel, the hell is that supposed to be? Oh, good, you're gonna have a Democrat on the thing where the two Republicans will dominate everything. That's cool. Anyway, the current state election board, which has a 3-1 Republican majority, hey, it's bipartisan. Anyway, would appoint a temporary administrator to run Fulton County elections if it finds wrongdoing. The county board could seek reinstatement. If the state board refuses, its administrator would remain in place for at least 9 months. The administrator would have the authority to make any personnel changes related to running elections, including replacing the director of elections and all poll officers. And this is consequential, not only because Fulton County is traditionally Democratic, which annoys the Republicans in Georgia, but it accounts for 11% of the state's electorate. It's 45.5% white, 44.5% black, 7.6% Asian descent. So it is a diverse district, it is a large district. And were you to be able to manipulate the results of that county alone, well, we remember how close Georgia was, JR. They could have thrown it. If they were able to throw out a ton of votes from Fulton County, Georgia would have went for Trump. I will remind everyone that Trump still would have lost the election, but this state now is potentially on a path to have its elections be sort of ceremonial. Like, you could go about the motions of it if you want, but they might be able to put whoever, whichever QAnon supporting person they want to be in charge of it.
And they will. That's basically what they're saying. Now, the number of Republicans, especially in states like Georgia, were talking about how, you know, they got pushback. They pushed back on Donald Trump, and they had issues with Brian Kemp had issues, and then the Secretary of State got a lot of hate from Donald Trump over him losing that state for them, and they had this like this image and this feel of being these Republicans that are fighting for the real rights of Americans. And although that they don't like Joe Biden and they don't like these Democrats, they're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. I was thinking that as it was happening, I said, this is a nice cover for them to then go behind the scenes, do what people like Donald Trump want them to do, except do it legislatively. Start chipping away at voting rights in a way that you can solidify it with the laws and the power that you can contain behind it. Yeah, they can say, we don't want to yell about it and go on Fox News every day like Donald Trump does and say, hey, took it from me, I can't believe it. So instead of that, they go to straight and go to doing their legislative parts about dismantling it behind the scenes, hoping that more people won't realize exactly what they're doing, which is the same thing that Donald Trump was doing, just with a different way. Again, the Republican Party's issue with Donald Trump was his execution, not the end point that he was looking for.
Yeah. And by the way, I guess maybe I should have mentioned this earlier. I just sort of take it for granted that people will know this. So they're targeting Fulton County. Now, the effort in Georgia is broader with that anti-democratic election bill that they already passed. The fact that they've already removed Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger as chair of the state election board and made him a non-voting member, despite the fact that he's a Republican, purely because he wouldn't go along with them. What I'm leaving out is they looked into Fulton County and they found no wrongdoing. And yet that justification for both the state election law as well as the efforts we're talking about in this block, they're not going to allow the fact that nothing was shown to have been done wrong. They're not going to let that stop them from overturning the entire process. And so, you know, I look forward to dramatic news, JR. I can't wait until in the wake of the 2024 election, we get to have them throwing out the whole Fulton County board and deciding, oh, you know, there's like 50,000 votes that we're not going to count actually. It's going to be really exciting news. Maybe it'll be a big news Wednesday.
And you know what'll happen when Democrats or anyone who was screwed over by the system responds to that and says, hey, you guys are doing a bunch of electoral things to steal this election. You know what they're going to say? You guys sound like Donald Trump back in 2020. How dare you challenge the results of an election? You guys complain about Donald Trump. This is the setup for that. He's this crazy madman, which he is. And then after that, we change the rules so that after we do cheat, which they have been trying to do, after we do cheat and try to win some more elections and someone brings it up, they're just like Donald Trump. This is the way this is gonna set up. And the general public who doesn't pay attention to every step of this process will go, yeah, they do sound like Donald Trump. Look at these sore losers. How dare they complain about Donald Trump doing this, and now they're doing it. Stay tuned for 24.
Oh, it's going to be fun. Except not. Anyway, okay, we're going to take our second break, but stick around. Some dramatic news coming out of Afghanistan up after this. Okay, everybody, let's jump into this. Oh, we have the poll results. Okay, so should Chris Cuomo step down from his hosting role at CNN? We asked you this at tyt.com/polls. The yeses have 27.39%, 72.61% of you said no. So about 3 out of 4 saying no. I think that's reasonable. Look, there's a lot of issues with the media, and I definitely think that there are issues around the Cuomo thing, like the fact that he almost certainly couldn't, like seriously talk about the nursing home scandal and all of that. But yeah, I don't expect that most people would think that he's going to step down. And I guess the question, the question is should. This is sort of a moral thing. 3 out of 4 said no, Jay. Are you surprised by that?
I am, because I would have been on the no side as well, but I'm surprised there weren't more that were thought opposite of me, because I don't know. I see the connection, but I don't see enough of the connection that it has much to do with Chris Cuomo's role in choosing stories and what to talk about. Like, if he doesn't, that's one show, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you know who else didn't talk about the nursing home things a million times? We didn't. That doesn't mean that we're the Cuomos. It's just we chose not to in certain aspects. We mentioned it and talked about it and went through the details of what was going on, but I don't know. If someone chooses not to talk about something, you can be upset and criticize. Like, you guys should talk about more substantive things. Go get him for that, or expect him to, and disappoint yourself if he doesn't. But I don't think that results in resignation. It just means you don't like the way he covers the news, so don't watch him.
Yeah, or has conflicts of interest that cause him to not. Yeah, and like, I understand people's continuing issues. We'll see. There's a lot of issues with a lot of media. Anyway, yeah. With that, we're going to jump into our last couple of stories for this hour. So let's do it. As Kabul was being taken over by the Taliban, there was a lot of news that was really striking that also left us with some questions. So the fact that the former president of Afghanistan, I guess still current president, Ashraf Ghani, had fled the country, that certainly raised a lot of eyebrows. But there's new details to it that, you know, grain of salt, but make it even more dramatic. Russia's embassy in Kabul said on Monday that Ghani had fled the country with 4 cars and a helicopter full of cash and had to leave some money behind, as it would not all fit in. Saying, this is a spokesman for the Russian embassy in Kabul said, as for the collapse of the outgoing regime, it is most eloquently characterized by the way Ghani fled Afghanistan. 4 cars were full of money. They tried to stuff another part of the money into a helicopter, but not all of it fit. And some of the money was left lying on the tarmac. So, JR, that is obviously a horrible image. It doesn't seem it fits with our idea of how this sort of thing works. I would not consider it confirmed at this point. I don't know. Is that being overly cautious? What do you think?
Oh, to not be sure that that's the way this went down?
Well, to not believe that necessarily this one ambassador is being 100% accurate about it. I don't rule it out at all. The corruption has been very clear for many years, but what do you think about it? How likely do you think that
is? It's definitely like believable. I mean, look, if we didn't see images of people literally grabbing onto the landing gear and the sides of this huge airplane that was taken off the tarmac, we may not believe that either, because that's some cartoonish style imagery that you may see. And you'd be like, there's no way people are that desperate enough that they're gonna jump on the sides of a plane that is moving and expect to potentially live. And also they said they found some human remains stuck in one of the landing gears once they got to where they were going. And things like that just happen. So if we didn't see it, it'd be hard to believe. So seeing another cartoon image of the former president here taking off and then literally stuffing money into the helicopter as he takes off. Was it a helicopter and money flying everywhere? That sounds like it's straight out of Looney Tunes. But so was the previous thing. But it's dead serious. And so I can buy it. But of course, you don't have to just confirm it and say, yeah, this one guy said so, so therefore it happened. But it's definitely like, it's imaginable.
Yeah, it is. It is. And details are, there's not a lot, basically. I had seen some other reporting saying he had taken $169 million, but it's not clear if they mean that that was in cash, which seems impossible. Or if funds had been transferred out of the country, but then why would you take some in cash? I don't know. I'm assuming that people, including the Taliban, are going to be looking into this as they take over all of that. Now, he did put a post up on social media back on Sunday defending his decision to leave, saying, "If I had stayed, countless of my countrymen would be martyred and Kabul would face destruction." And look, I'm just going to say this. Maybe this makes me the bad guy. I think it's totally legitimate for him to think that he would have been killed. I think he almost certainly would have been killed. I don't think him staying would have changed the outcome at all, right? Am I wrong? Like, I don't think they would have held out against the Taliban if he'd been there. So yeah. Now that is separate from, are you then, is it cool if you leave and you strip the country of its resources on your way out? That's a different question. Or if you had known it was happening, could you have gotten additional people out? Those are important additional questions. But I'm not shocked that he thought that he would die if he stayed. That seems
pretty crazy. Well, this is how corruption works. It happens in America too. I think it was Duncan Hunter back then, senior, one of those. I don't want to disparage the hunters, but there was a Republican politician who was getting busted, headed to jail. He literally put sacks of money in garbage cans and threw them on his wife's lawn. Jing talks about this all the time. So it's not like it's something that's exclusive to this country because the corruption is so rampant there and it's not as rampant here. It's just, you know, we cover it up well here and do it in different ways. So things like collecting as much money as possible once you're escaping and fleeing the moment, and then taking and literally stuffing as much money in your pockets as possible is not a crazy thought. It's just what happens, because like whatever I can get left, because I've stolen it already, let me try and steal it some more before they come and get me. Why not? This is the same situation. It's not like the people are getting all that money because corruption is rampant.
Yeah, exactly. And like we said, that's been known for a very long time. I mean, should have been known when we went in. The issue was, you know, that it sucks from the point of view of the people who should be getting that money and are not. But the companies that are there to dole it out with the equipment and the staff and getting the contracts, they don't care who ends up getting the money. What is it, Lockheed or Raytheon? What do they care if Ghani stole all the money? It like literally doesn't affect them. Their stock has gone up by 1,000% over the last 2 decades. It doesn't matter at all.
They're getting more money now, from us anyway.
Exactly. Now we do have an update as of earlier this morning that Ashraf Ghani had been found. He is sheltering in the UAE. I'm saying like he had been in the woods or whatever. No, we just know where he is now. That he's been in the UAE with his family. The Gulf States Foreign Ministry confirmed the news in a statement issued on Wednesday afternoon. Now, will we ever find out if money was taken, how much money was taken? I sort of doubt it. I don't know what capacity Afghanistan, whether, you know, the lingering elements of, like, I think the vice president is still, you know, trying to hold out in an area, or the Taliban would be legally or technologically capable of taking the money back. It would be interesting to know, but I wonder if we'll ever have an answer to that mystery.
Yeah, I doubt it. I don't expect it. And also, if the answer does come, how much are people paying attention to it? There's so many things, man. Every day there's a new cycle of what's going on here and the next step of what happened. And then the next thought of who's gonna, I mean, the Taliban's trying to push some PR scheme that they're this new welcoming governing body that's gonna look out for women's rights and positions and stuff. So
I know
all these things are gonna continue to happen. So things like this story are gonna go quickly. By like, oh yeah, sure, he stole a bunch of money. Sure, good job. See you later, bro. And we're moving on to the next. So I don't think we're ever gonna feel the full confirmation of what really happened here.
Yeah. Well, and look, I think unless the Taliban is being totally honest, which seems impossible, we're gonna have a lot of news coming out of Afghanistan over the next few weeks, months, years. It's gonna be absolutely devastating. At the end of the day, is the money thing gonna be the most significant part? Probably not for the people who are likely to be victimized and lives are about to be taken. Now, let's jump to one other element of this. There was an exchange earlier between a reporter that, at least as of right now, had not yet been identified in the White House press pool, and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. It's a pretty interesting back and forth. Take a look at it.
Thank you, sir. President Biden said that there were very few national security interests for the United States in maintaining some peace in Afghanistan. Would you actually reiterate that today? Would you say that there is no interest for us having some presence on the borders of Iran, on the borders of Pakistan, on the borders of near China? Would you, or Tajikistan, would you just say that we should just give that up?
I would say that the president does not believe that the United States should be fighting and dying in a war for the purpose of sustaining American military boots near Tajikistan or Pakistan or Iran. No, I would say that that is something that is not. What you just laid out as a national security interest, we would not agree that it is right to ask American soldiers to risk their lives for the purpose of maintaining a presence near Tajikistan. Yes.
Okay, so JR, I've been wondering ever since Sunday, how is this going to impact the course of withdrawal from Afghanistan? And to the extent that this is laying out some sort of Biden doctrine, I hate that sort of terminology, but that's what people are saying, that we're not going to be involved. First of all, how shallow is that? What sorts of involvement are still going to be around? But will they reverse on the whole thing? Well, at least as of today, at least as of National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, they are not taking the bait, the very predictable bait from the media that, hey, don't we still have some vague, unstated interest around Tajikistan? Like, the guy was like trying to come up with countries that almost no American would be able to identify and interests that nobody can identify that should necessitate permanent military deployments in all these different regions. And Jake Sullivan seems to indicate that the word from the top right now is no, we don't need to have soldiers there. What do you think?
Well, I guess they're looking to quell some people's fears about what the images we're seeing here. I mean, maybe that's from the reporter's point of view, or if it's from the Biden administration's point of view, that no, either everything is okay and what we've done is fine, and what we pulled out is fine, and the devastation that you're seeing is going to kind of blow over, or if we'll feel better if we still keep some kind of presence in the Middle East so that we have this position where we can potentially respond, because we're getting a lot of conservatives, and I think Donald Trump specifically even said, "Oh, we're gonna, we're gonna beat the hell out of them," or something like that. We're gonna jump and run back in and get them, so we feel like we're more comfortable with this thought that we're right there. Oh no, we left, but we're still kind of there, and we have this control over everything because we're more comfortable that way. Because as soon as we see chaos happening in places like this, we assume, "Oh my God, they're coming for us next," and that's where all the fear comes in, especially when it comes to people like the refugees and the way everybody's talking. So I don't know, the narrative could go either way when it comes to something like that, whether we're there, whether we're not. It's just either it's okay, that's why we're not there, or we're still there, so we're gonna make it okay when it gets worse. But in reality, how much do we really talk about the people that are directly being affected that live there? The people that have been, that are now fearing for their lives. As again, because of these devastating pictures of people jumping on planes trying to get the hell out of the country. If we're not talking about the human beings that are now fearing for their lives and their livelihood and everything that they've thought they had, are we really caring about that situation, or are we just caring about ways to blame it politically?
Well, I mean, based on what I've been seeing from pretty much everyone on the right, they are very much trying to get out in front of any, whether knee-jerk or honest values statement that we should care about these people and we should defend these people and help those who helped us. They're not having that. That said, you know, my fear is that the media is going to do what that reporter was doing, which is, hey, but shouldn't we be everywhere all the time, always, no matter what, no matter how much it costs? But I don't know, like, at least in terms of the Taliban, maybe the right, which has, I don't know if you've been seeing this, JR, there are a lot of like very defensive statements about the Taliban coming out of the right, all of the things they seem to love about the Taliban and everything. Maybe they will be against further deployments because they don't want the Taliban to be hurt. But that said, my fear, so I'm glad of what I'm seeing at the Biden administration for Afghanistan in terms of not going back in so far. We'll see, we'll keep watching. But that said, look, Jake Sullivan's statement is good, but how much of a pulling back from all this will we actually see? Will we go down from damn near 1,000 military installations around the globe? Will we just convert from troops on the ground risking their lives to drones in the air, taking civilian lives even more than we were before? We definitely need to find out. I want to believe that this is a major change in American foreign policy. There's a lot of reason to doubt that that's actually true, though.
Well, with that kind of change in American foreign policy, I know we have a couple seconds. even with that change in American foreign policy, yes, the other changes in American foreign policy, like the interventionists and the way we change and disrupt all these different countries. So they can't be just one fold, it has to be a bunch of them.
I agree. And we will be watching. Now that said, if you're watching on our linear platform, thank you so much for joining us for this first hour. The show is too big for 1 hour though. It's Big News Wednesday. So we are gonna have more news coming up for you. So if you're watching on Twitch, or if you're watching on YouTube, when we come back from our break, we got a few more stories. We'll be back in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.